Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 44, The Killing of Kamsa, Text 10. Na sabham pravishet pragya sabya doshan anusmaran abruvan vibruvan agyo nara kilbisham ashnute nasabam pravishet pragya sabya doshan anusmaran abruvan vibruvan agyo nara kilbisham ashnute na not sabham an assembly pravishet should enter pragya the wise person sabhya of the assembly members doshan sinful discrepancies anusmaran keeping in mind abruvan not speaking vibruvan speaking wrongly agya ignorant or pretending to be so nara a man kilbisham sin ashnute incurs translation a wise person should not enter an assembly if he knows the participants there are committing acts of impropriety and if having entered such an assembly he fails to speak the truth speaks falsely or pleads ignorance, he will certainly incur sin. There's no purport. Let us read the next verse and indeed the verse following. And then verse 13 has a purport. We'll read that also. Valgata shatram abhita krishnasya vadanam ujam Vikshyatam Shramavaryuptam Padmakosham Ivambhupi. Just see the lotus face of Krishna as he darts around his foe. That face, covered with drops of perspiration brought on by the strenuous fight, resembles a lotus covered with dew. Kim napashyata ramasya mukam atamra lochanam mushtikam pratisamarsham hasasam ramba shobitam. Don't you see the face of Lord Balaram with its eyes copper red from his anger toward Mushtika and its beauty enhanced by his laughter and his absorption in the fight? Punya bhata vraja bhuvo yadayam nrilinga Gaga, Guda Purana Purusho, Vanachitramalya, Gapalayan Sahabala Kwanayams Chavenum, Vikridayanchati Giri Traram Ramarchitangri. How pious are the tracts of land in Vraja, for there the primeval personality of Godhead, disguising himself with human traits, wanders about, enacting his many pastimes. Adorned with wonderfully variegated forest garlands, he whose feet are worshipped by Lord Shiva and Goddess Rama vibrates his flute as he tends the cows in the company of Balaram. I think it's okay. Thanks. Purport. In this verse, the devoted ladies in the audience point out the difference between Mathura and Vrindavan. They want to indicate that in Vrindavan, Krishna simply enjoys with his girlfriends and boyfriends, whereas here in Mathura, the Lord is subjected to harassment by the bullying tactics of professional wrestlers. Thus the ladies are condemning the city of Mathura because of their pain at seeing Krishna in what they consider an unfair wrestling match. Of course, Mathura is also one of the Lord's eternal abodes, but here the women in the assembly express their love in a critical mood. So, yes, let's just read this last verse again, 13. Punya bata vrajabhuvo yadayam nrilinga gudha purana purusho vanachitramalya gapalayan sahabala kwanayams chavenum Vikridayanchati Giritra Ramarchitangri. How pious are the tracts of land in Vraja, for there the primeval personality of Godhead, disguising himself with human traits, wanders about, enacting his many pastimes. Adorned with wonderfully variegated forest garlands, he whose feet are worshipped by Lord Shiva and Goddess Rama vibrates his flute as he tends the cows in the company of Balaram. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bastyutyade Jitarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpata Rubhyas Jagripa Sindhu Bhyavacha Vadidhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is now the ladies in Mathura, the women, it appears, not just the girls, but the ladies, the mature ladies. They're observing the scene, and they're observing it, of course, from the parental perspective, and in that regard, they're feeling compassion. Karunya is one of the subsidiary rasas. In love for the Lord, and it is appropriate for older people. So they're feeling it that look at these two big wrestlers, Chanura and Mushtika, and there's various other of their associates there also. There's a whole gang of them really around that arena. But Krishna and Balaram at this stage are fighting Chanura and Mushtika, and particularly Lord Krishna is fighting Chanura and Balaram is fighting Mushtika. And so the ladies are feeling in that parental mood of compassion and concern for the well-being of the beloved junior. They are feeling that this is unfair. This is not right. Actually, they're feeling that doshan, it is a fault. Fault, actually. Kaler doshani de rajan, as explained later on, right towards the end of the Bhagavatam. This age of Kali is an ocean of fault. So it means fault in a very complete and quite pervasive sense of the term. And fault not just like, you know, I mispronounced something or just dropped something. It's not so important, but fault like, wow, like meat-eating intoxication. Something's really wrong. So they're feeling that, first of all, in the first verse 10, they're expressing some regret from their own perspectives, taking into consideration their own positions and their own standards, that a wise person shouldn't even enter an assembly. He shouldn't even come into a situation. What to speak of being there, participating, and just being part of a situation where, if he knows the participants are committing acts of impropriety. So, a pious person, a good person, prajna, a good person, a wise person, should not even go there, shouldn't even be seen in such a place. But if you somehow or other, even if you are a wise person, but just somehow or other, perhaps circumstantially, you find you're just there, and it's now you're already there and it's too late. So then, if you become influenced by the situation that you you don't speak up and say this is wrong, or if influenced by the situation you get into that mood, and for example, if it's a situation where people are lying, cheating like that, expressing dishonesty, then if you get drawn into that and you now start being dishonest, then you kilbisham ashnute, you incur sin. This is, of course, in one sense, in an important sense, it is pointing out the, you could say, dangers, but just the nature of association, the dangers of bad association, and just the nature of association in general, is that if you accept some association. Then you become part of it. You become implicated. You become influenced by it. And in other words, you will reflect it. You'll reflect it yourself. Of all people, none other than Hiranyakashipu is quoted in Nectar of Devotion, saying the soul, he's referred, well, it's actually a quotation from Hari Bhakti Sudhadaya, if I remember correctly, that the soul is like crystal. You hold this some crystal up to light, it immediately refracts that light, just passes through and just passes out on the other side. So Hiranyakashipu says, the soul is like that. Actually, he's warning the teachers to just be careful that my son Prahlad doesn't get some bad association like Vaishnavs. Ooh. And watch out. You know, he's really thinking about the subject. Don't just watch out for Vaishnavs, but watch out for Vaishnavs in disguise. Because they may influence my son, because the soul is like crystal. So if you see, the ladies are saying, if there's some gathering and you see that in that gathering, there's a lot of dishonesty, that people are not straightforward, and like the whole orientation of the gathering is just some dishonest activities like that. Then even if you just go into it, it's bad. But if somehow or other you end up in it, perhaps unknowingly, and if you don't stand up and say, no, this is wrong, and what to speak of if you get into it yourself, then kilbisham ashnute, you incur sin. You'll get reaction. There'll be consequences. You will feel it in due course. In our context, perhaps more. It applies in different ways, but it very much applies. If you see there is a gathering of devotees and they are speaking badly about some other devotee or devotees, this happens sometimes. So there's discussion about this in Nectar of Devotion, that if you just happen to be there and you hear some blasphemy, criticism of devotees, then you should ideally correct them, point out their fault, and bring them to the right state of consciousness. And if you're not capable of doing that, maybe you're not really capable of countering their arguments and ideas sufficiently, or something like that. Or maybe they're senior to you and you feel very awkward trying to stand up like that. Then at least leave the place, get out. Just get out. And don't try not to carry it with you. You know, some remembrance of what they're talking about. But in between the two, you could cut out their tongues. You could kill them. But, oh well, you know, if the circumstances circumstances you don't feel quite up to that, and at least leave the place. Because you hear it, you become part of it. If you accept that association, accept means you hear it, it enters you and penetrates your heart. You have accepted that association, and now you are part of it, and it will come out. Don't think that, well, you know, it went in, but we'll just keep it under control or something like that. Don't worry. Sooner or later, it will come out in some situation, meaning you'll become negative, critical in some situation where it's inappropriate, which is practically any situation. It's inappropriate to speak like that. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami makes the point that some devotees may be sitting around talking about another devotee that, you know, I won't mention any names, but you can just imagine, just fill in the blank, any name, you know, such and such. Ah, he's a nice devotee, yeah, but he's actually like this, he's like that, and did you hear what he did the other day, and I think he's going to do this, and someone else may come along, like we said, you may come along and you may hear this and you may realize, oh, this is not right. So then you may try to step in, and nicely but suitably and effectively try and correct things. But they may say, Prabhu, we are talking about a devotee. This is Krishna Katha. This is Bhakta Katha. This is transcendental. We're talking about how this devotee could improve himself or herself. So it's fine. It's good, actually. Not only is it acceptable, but actually it's positive, it's good, it's valuable. So Srila Raghunath Das Goswami says that these devotees in this type of discussion, they may think like that, they may feel like that it's Krishna Katha, it's Bhakta Katha, and it's purifying, it's beneficial for us. So it's good. They may think, it is purifying. We're talking about devotees. It is purifying. It is like taking a bath. Cleansing. But Raghunath Das Goswami says, no. Well, he says, yes. It is like taking a bath. But it is like taking a bath in donkey urine. Hare Krishna. Anyway, I don't know much about donkey urine, but, any urine, but sure, doesn't sound very auspicious at all. So these ladies, they're actually feeling guilty. They're actually feeling guilty themselves in their mood of compassion and concern. Look how unfair it is, small boys against big wrestlers. And they're feeling guilty. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? Why did we not at least walk out when we understood what was going on? Why did we not at least leave? We are implicated. But then, well, of course, that's their question. Why didn't we leave? But the answer to the question, in one sense, comes in the following two verses and the third verse following, which we read the purport of, is that we see that despite this deadly dangerous situation, because they know this is not just a wrestling match like we hear, at least, you see, or some people see, on television sometimes. You know, they have these big professional wrestlers in America and wherever, all over, and they fight and it's televised and it's all very dramatic. But we hear it is like it is staged. Not only are they big, strong men or women even, but they're expert actors. They're expert actors that not only trained in physical combat, bodybuilding, etc., but they're trained in acting. How to make it look like you just smashed a person, but you didn't. It didn't actually hurt him. But it looks like you just about knocked his head off. So they know it's not such a wrestling match which is simply in entertainment, at least 90% simply for the purpose of entertaining people, and it's not like a real competition, something like that. They know it's a battle to death. That is a very drastic situation. But still, they're seeing. Just see the lotus face of Krishna as he darts around his foe. That face covered with drops of perspiration, brought on by the strenuous fight, resembles a lotus covered with dew. This is generally, you know, when there's a fight to the death right in front of your eyes, you normally don't really, well, I don't know, I've never seen such a fight, actually, but it's a little hard to imagine that the spectators will just become like deeply absorbed in the, particularly the beautiful features of the participants. Don't you see the face of Lord Balaram? His eyes copper red from his anger towards Mushtika, and its beauty. Sri Sri Radhika Lokananda Sri Sri Gornitai Sri Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Its beauty enhanced by his laughter and his absorption in the fight. They're seeing Krishna and Balaram not in, you know, some sort of desperate, that not that they are exactly in some desperate mood. But Krishna and Balaram are so attractive and so beautiful that they're appreciating their beauty and sweetness. And even the last verse, they say that how glorious, how pious are the tracts of land of Vraja, where Krishna had his loving pastimes, his intimate pastimes. Better than this place, Mathura, where, at least in this case, he's having some shocking pastime, ghastliness. Yeah. So it's a very interesting study. It's always very interesting study, the moods, the consciousness, as far as we may be able to perceive it or as far as it is described. The consciousness of the different great devotees in different situations with Krishna, connected with Krishna and Balaram. It's very amazing how they think. They think very differently from how the average person thinks. Yes. And they act in very different ways. Even though sometimes they may appear to be thinking, or externally may appear, they may actually be acting, apparently. Similarly, to ordinary people in some special situation, but actually there's great depth to it in Krishna consciousness. For example, when, after Krishna subdued Kaliya, then the whole pastime ended in the late afternoon, and they had to return home, but they felt it was too far, so they camped out nearby. It is a place now, it's called Davanala Kund, the Kund where the fire was extinguished, and it's a kilometer or two at the most, say two, from the actual Kaliya Ghat. So they went there and took rest overnight at that place. And during the night, a big forest fire just erupted around them and surrounded them. It was coming in from all sides, like encircling them and coming in. Of course, which is highly unlikely, really, because fires like this, fires outside, they're subject to the wind. And so you cannot really get a fire like that in a circle coming in on itself. But anyway, this fire was, because Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, that fire was a person. That fire was a friend of Kaliya's, who was not happy at how Kaliya got treated. Of course, Kaliya was not killed, but still, he got smashed very heavily and, like, severely embarrassed. So that fire, Sanatana Goswami says, wanted revenge, and particularly to kill Krishna, but the other Brijbasis, no problem, as long as he got Krishna. So then, the Brijbasis, they woke up, it's in the middle of the night, they all woke up, and they saw this big fire just encircling them, and apparently they panicked, and they called out, "Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho." Krishna, powerful armed Krishna, save us. And there was a situation very much like what you would expect if some ordinary people found that they were encircled by a fire or in a building that was burning, something like that. There was a situation, apparently, of panic. Save us! Save us! Help! What to do? Save our lives! And, well, it just seems like sort of a typical type of response from your just typical type of ordinary person. And, well, it certainly doesn't sound like the reaction of someone who, for example, is well versed in Bhagavad Gita. Dhiras tatra na muyati. Not being bewildered by the, you know, the change of body which looks like it's about to happen. But anyway. And of course, these devotees, the bridge busseeds, they are, you know, what to speak of being a devotee like Arjuna. They're actually even much more advanced, actually. They're really very advanced. They're the most advanced. We assume, Srimati Radharani was there. She is the most advanced. And all the others were there. But, you know, why would they react in such an apparently ordinary way? Our acharyas explain that they were thinking that if we die, we are going to lose Krishna's association. You know, I may be imagining it, but it seems that when the birds come, the flies go away. Maybe there's a symbiotic relationship or something. I don't know. Because the flies, you know, they're a bit annoying sometimes. So they were thinking, if we die, we're going to lose Krishna's association. And then, of course, we'll take birth again. Because we're not advanced devotees. It's only the advanced devotees, you know, the very philosophical ones. They, when the time of death comes, they can just sit down and just, you know, focus their minds and just keep cool. But we're not that advanced. We're just village people. So if we die now, who knows where we're going to take birth? It could be anywhere. And it could easily be somewhere where Krishna is not. And we'll just lose his association, lose whatever very little Krishna consciousness we have, and just get lost in the material world. So therefore, we should not die, because we are not ready to die. We need more time before we die, so we can become more Krishna conscious. So when the time of death comes, we can be ready. So because we are not ready like this, we'd better not die. We really better not die. I mean, it's serious. We really, really better not die. And who can save us? Well, Krishna, of course. He killed all those demons. So, Krishna, save us. So you can see, it's deeper. The consciousness is deeper. And here, reading these verses, we see how these ladies in Mathura, their consciousness is deeper than just being concerned that this is unfair and like that. They feel like that in their mood of transcendental compassion, but at the same time, they're relishing seeing the beautiful forms and faces of Krishna and Balaram. And how the drops of perspiration, like little beads of perspiration on Krishna's forehead as he's strenuously fighting, they look like beautiful little drops of dew in the morning. What an observation for someone in such a situation. It's really amazing. And that's because they are very amazing. They're very, very great devotees. And indeed, in this whole situation here, you may have discussed already, I don't know, but in this whole situation here, in that wrestling arena in Mathura, there are all sorts of different people observing the wrestling match. And in terms of their different types of consciousness, they're seeing the situation, and particularly they're seeing in Krishna and Balaram differently, very differently. And it's something which is also graphically described, that, well, these ladies, as we said, their mood is compassion and righteous indignation, like that, in a parental mood. But then there were young girls there, like sort of teenage or so, young girls there. They saw Krishna and Balaram as the most beautiful cupids, just overpoweringly attractive in the romantic, transcendentally romantic, but still romantic type of sense. They saw their handsomeness and like that. Then there were other older people, parental type people, the men, and they felt that this is unfair, like these ladies in that parental type mood. They felt this is unfair, but they felt, let's go down and stop it. Yeah. There's a whole lot of us get together and just pull these wrestlers apart. I mean, separate them from each other. And because it's not right. It's just not right. So let's stand up for what is right physically. Let's go in there and stop it by force. Then there were people like the Cowherd Boys. Cowherd Boys were there. And the Cowherd Boys, you know, they had already, how many demons had they seen Krishna kill? Perhaps initially, you know, when the first demon or two or few came, and they weren't used to seeing these things happening, perhaps initially it was like, you know, here's this huge demon, wow, and here's little Krishna, our friend, what can he do? But then that demon got wiped out, and then the next one, and then the next one, and after a while they just got used to it. And it just ceased to be like, you know, a wow, sort of dangerous situation. And it was like, yeah, it was like watching those wrestlers. If you know what's going on, it's just entertainment. And it's not a real competition. It's not a real battle. And so there are none of these emotions like real fear or, and yeah, because every day it would happen, when at least when they were herding the cows. Prabhupada explains just in the last few chapters that he translated and commented on, Srila Prabhupada explains that every day a demon would come at lunchtime, just before lunchtime, and then there'd be big fight, demon would be killed, cowherd boys would be shouting, yeah, go for it, Krishna. And then, of course, Krishna would win. And that was a sign, time for lunch. So they would then take a lunch break. It was the standard program. It was every single day, 7 days a week, because they didn't take Sunday off. No. It was just every day. Okay, time for lunch. And then later on in the afternoon, another demon would come, and same thing, Krishna would kill him. And then that was a sign, okay, time to go home. And Prabhupada makes the point that if these demons had not come, first of all, they would have not stopped for lunch, because they were just having too much fun with Krishna and Balaram. And secondly, they would never have gone home, because they're just having too much fun. Yeah. So the cowherd boys were there. And the cowherd boys, you know, they thought when they saw Chanura and Mushtika, even though they are like, you know, these big muscle bound wrestlers, just, you know, just really heavy looking human beings, but they had seen people who were kilometers tall. Talk about being big. And people capable of defeating demigods. Talk about being, you know, a he-man. And seeing them all just get smashed, literally smashed to pieces by Krishna. Sanatana Goswami describes in the case of Arishtasura, Krishna kicked him and kept kicking him. He was already dead, but Krishna kept kicking him and kicking him until he ended up like a lump of jelly. You'd look, you couldn't see. Ah, look, dead Arishtasura. No, just like this big lump of something. Yeah. So the cowherd boys, they thought, who are these two, Chanura and Mushtika? They got no chance. They were thinking it was unfair in another way. You know, at least give Krishna and Balaram a decent fight. What can these two do? And the wrestlers, somehow, they got some sort of insight. And they saw Krishna and Balaram as death personified. And Kamsa also saw Krishna like, basically like that, some monster. And even it's described, there were some impersonalists there who think that we're all Brahman, God is light, like this. And when Krishna and Balaram walked out into the arena, they didn't see Krishna and Balaram. They saw these two lights, like floating, hovering lights moving out, because that's their consciousness. And then there were some Shunyavadis, forerunners to the Buddhists. Actually, before Buddha appeared and presented Shunyavad, voidist philosophy, that nothing exists, there were already voidists. They were called, they were a type of Mayavadi. They were called the Kshanik Vijnanavadis. Jiva Goswami mentions this. The Kshanik Vijnanavadis. They were forerunners of Buddhism. And their philosophy was like that, that nothing exists, a nihilistic philosophy. And when Krishna and Balaram walked out into the arena, they saw nothing. They saw nothing. So, all these different people seeing in all these different ways. And here in the purport, point is brought out that these ladies, older ladies who are watching, they are, you know, despite the drama of the situation, high drama, despite that, they're saying to each other, just how pious are the tracts of land of Vraja. Because there, Krishna performed different pastimes to this pastime. There, Krishna and Balaram performed very beautiful, loving pastimes. Whereas here, there's this whole situation now. It's very wrong, and they have to fight, and so on. But in Vrindavan, they would dance and have all sorts of sweet exchanges with their parents and others. So that Vrindavan, oh, it's much better than this Mathura. Which is true. It is better. But still, Mathura, compared to Phoenix, well, that's also better. Of course, oh, we have Radha Glokananda. That's nice. That's wonderful. But still, you look out the window, what do you see? The brewery. Anyway, welcome to the material world. So Mathura, oh, what a place, what a place, compared to the material world, what a place. But even Mathura, compared to Vrindavan, then Vrindavan, you say, oh, what a place. And Mathura, okay, all right. But Vrindavan, oh, what a place. And it's not just the place, but how pious are the tracts of land, ultimately refers to the inhabitants of the tracts of land. The Brijbasis, what devotees. And because of those devotees, Krishna's pastimes there were just so wonderful, the most wonderful. And because here in Mathura, you know, we have these cronky people, these just, you know, poor excuses for human beings, Kamsa and his associates. And as a result of having these useless people, Krishna has to do these things and get involved in all of this. He should be dancing. Of course, when Krishna and Balaram fought with Chanura and Mustika, they were dancing actually. But it's just a different type of dance. You know, there's Bharatanatyam, and then there's Kathak. They're different types of dance. And the Kathak, you know, it's kind of violent, much more so than real Bharatanatyam, not Bollywood Bharatanatyam. So these pastimes, Krishna Balaram killing, eventually Kamsa, actually Krishna and Balaram are dancing. Joyful pastimes. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question or words of wisdom from Kripa Moya Prabhu, please enlighten us. Chanura and Mushtika not just run for it, hit the road, head for the hills, because they saw Krishna and Balaram as death personified. You know, in other words, they saw them, quite shocking. But, you know, for example, Ravana, it describes on the last day, he was the last one on his side. Everyone else finished. And on the side of Lord Ram, the whole army was still there because they'd been brought back to life. And the number, Ramayan says, the number of soldiers, monkeys, bears, etc., on the side of Lord Ram was, big number, 1 koti maha ogre. 1 koti maha ogre. 1 koti is already 10 million, but 1 koti maha ogre is 1 followed by 64 zeros. Now, what's that? It's a lot. And he came out of his palace and he saw this 1 koti maha ogre. And Ravana thought, no problem. I'll just kill them. This is, you know, misguided optimism. And some devotee did a calculation. If he'd killed 1 monkey every second, it would have taken more than a day of Brahma to kill them all. But still, that the demoniac optimism was such that he carried on. And even Ram had offered him the evening before, just give me Sita back. That's all. Just give me Sita back. You can continue ruling. We'll be friends. I'll bring all your family members and everybody back to life. And I'll make them forget we were ever enemies. And we'll be friends. We will be friends. And you rule. I'm not, you know, trying to be a colonial power and take you over. You rule. It's all yours. Just give me Sita back. That's all. Just Sita. Ravan said no. So perhaps, you know, I can't remember what it says in the, if it addresses that point in the commentaries, but it's an interesting point. But they were, you know, qualified demons. So it's quite possible that despite, you know, having some vision like that, they would still feel that, you know, even if death comes before me, I can deal with him. Because there are stories of people who have met death. And, yeah. And, I mean, even warriors in battle. No. Would you believe? I was reading, I think the day before yesterday, about this fellow in Norway. The trial is on right now. He killed all those people. You know that story? And he's explaining that he, you know, in his, you know, totally insane way, it's just bizarre in the extreme, he explains that as far as he was concerned, he was going onto a battlefield and he just assumed he would be killed. He just assumed it was his last day because he just assumed the army would come and, you know, and that would just be that. Although he ended up getting arrested, actually. But he still felt in his mad way, you know, I have this mission. And he said, he had accepted his own death and just, you know, he was just going to carry on because he felt it was his duty. But the Kshatriyas feel like that in a more sane way when they go onto the battlefield. They accept their own death. As far as they're concerned, they're dead men already. And if they live, it's just, you know. And if they get into a situation where they should be killed, but their lives are spared, they feel bad. You know, they feel disturbed. So I would say for people like Chanara and Mustika, who are, you know, they're Kshatriyas, some sort of Kshatriyas. And they're like, on a professional basis, facing death on a regular basis, you know, it's very likely that even though they see, wow, this is death, that they would not be fazed by it at all, but they just wholeheartedly get into the fight. Because, you know, the Kshatriyas, they're not chickens. No strategic withdrawals. You just go until you can't go any longer. And even if, you know, there are these classical stories, in order to kill the opposition, you have to grab his weapon, which he's holding tight, and pull it through you. And because he's still holding it, that's how you'll get close enough to kill him. They do stuff like that. You know, they really do stuff like that and die. And just, you know, completely knowing that they're going to die. Such is the life of a Kshatriya. And we are not Kshatriyas, so I guess we would wonder, you know, why didn't they run? You know, they'd never, if they had run, they would never have been able to live it down. You know, their wrestling careers would have been finished. Thank you. Yes. Well, you know, Krishna, the thing is about Krishna that he doesn't like demons. He really doesn't like them. You know, Krishna loves everyone, but if someone really becomes a demon, you know, Krishna sort of snaps. Oh yeah. And ultimately it becomes like Nrsingadev. He becomes Nrsingadev. So, and Krishna doesn't think that I'm God and this is just some little, you know, insignificant little conditioned soul. Krishna doesn't really think so much. He gets into it and he fights and he just smashes him to pieces because he doesn't like demons. Yeah. So, I mean, you could say like that. But due to rasa, and yeah, these ladies are not seeing it like that. They're seeing the small child, small children. Yeah. And we, even though we're not on that rasa level, you know, we understand, like you're saying, that it's a totally unfair match. But still we like it because we know Krishna, this is something Krishna's into. He's into it in a big way. So we get behind Krishna. Arjuna Prabhu, some words of wisdom.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita,
Kshatriyas. There's just no question of it. You go down fighting. That's it. Plus, then you go to the heavenly planets. Leave planet Earth, which in many ways is very mediocre materially, and you go to the heavenly planets. Free ticket. Go for it. Whereas if you just fizzle out in old age, just, you know, the system just sort of slowly ceases to function. Well, who knows? But if you die in battle, if you die nobly doing your duty in battle, heavenly planets, here we come. Yeah. Oh, yes. No, it's okay. When Krishna? Oh, yeah. Different demons who are killed by Krishna get different types of liberation. Agasura got Sarupya Mukti. Others get impersonal liberation. Jiva Goswami discusses it. It's a very interesting discussion. That when it's said, you know, like it's a positive thing, killed by Krishna, impersonal liberation, good, you know, fortunate. He says that that statement is spoken from the perspective of a materialistic person. For a materialistic person, impersonal liberation is good. It's you know, elevation. But he makes the point that for the devotees, Kaivalya Narakayate, impersonal liberation is like hell. So he makes the point that these demons, they're demons. They should go to hell. Just in the normal course of events, if Krishna wasn't there and maybe they were killed by some enemy or they just died of some cause or other, but they're really demons. They'd go to hell, no doubt. But here now they're given liberation, and some people might think from the ordinary perspective, oh, good, they got liberation. Wow, it's so difficult to get. But Jiva Goswami makes the point that Kaivalya Narakayate, that the devotees, in other words, the reality is that impersonal liberation is hellish. It's not just the devotee's perspective on it. The devotee's perspective is the real perspective. So he makes the point that yes, those demons should go to hell. Generally, they go to the hellish planets, but these ones, they go to hell in the form of impersonal liberation. So he says it's like a trick situation. Mundane people would think, oh, liberation, wow. But the devotees know it's hell. So the demons go to hell. But some, there are some, like Agasura got Sarupya Mukti. Putana went to some sort of situation as Krishna's nurse. So that's different. But that's because there were certain important Krishna conscious considerations in their cases. But otherwise, you're sort of typical demons. If they're killed by Krishna and they get liberation, it's effectively hell, because that's what you expect a demon to get. Yeah. Yeah, Putana, you know, it's a bit of a long story really, but she breastfed Krishna, she saw him, and she appreciated him. What a beautiful little child. There was some appreciation. In her previous life, she was a relative of Bali Maharaj. And she had a very positive, for some period of time, you know, at least as long as it took for Vamana to come into the assembly, she immediately started feeling, what a beautiful child. I want him as my son. And that feeling went on through, there was some discussion with Bali Maharaj. Then eventually, after some time, Vamana took his three steps and then eventually arrested Bali. At that point, Putana in the previous life thought, you know, what a horrible little child. I thought I was going to have him as my son, and I will, but when I do, I'll kill him. So, you know, there was a reasonably substantial amount of positive Krishna consciousness, directly or indirectly, consciously or, you know, unintentionally, in the case of Putana. And in the case of Agasura, he got Sarupya Mukti. Means he went to Vaikuntha and got a four-armed form. But that's because he was the brother of Putana. And because Putana was already now a resident of the kingdom of God, a pure devotee, then he got included in that benediction that the family members, descendants, and so on of devotees, they get liberation, they may go back to Godhead. But others who are more sort of just general demons, they were not so fortunate. They would get impersonal liberation and after some time fall down again. And once they fall down to ordinary material life, well, it's just a matter of time before they go to hell. Generally. Okay. One. Yes. We have what? Oh, okay. Right, right. Yes. They're not Kshatriyas. They're like reflections of Kshatriyas. You know, and a reflection is not the real thing. You can't talk to someone's reflection. You can't have a relationship with a person's shadow. They're like shadows. I mean, in other words, something is there apparently on the surface, but you scratch beneath the surface and you see their sutras. You see they're just exploiters, they're abusers. So, yeah, they don't go to the heavenly planets. No way. They'll just get whatever they deserve, you know, for all their meat eating and you know, all the whatever nonsense they do. Escape. Krishna swallowed it. Yes. Krishna told them to close their eyes. And then he drank it just like a drink. Yeah. Like a refreshing drink. And then he told them, okay, you can open your eyes now.
So he drank that demon.
Yes. Krishna can do things like that.
When Shishupala was blaspheming Krishna, both parties slowly drawing their weapons. And then when he got to the 100th blaspheme, they all had their weapons out with this kind of charge. And Krishna manifested his Sudarshan. The glare of the Sudarshan.
Shri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.